You're listening to a Rhino.com podcast. Yes, you are.
Hello and welcome to another Rhinocast. First up, we have the Lefsetz Letter with Bob Lefsetz, followed by an interview with Ariel Kebel, star of American Pie Bandcamp. Stay tuned.
To recognize your son. Coming home, yeah, yeah. Getting home, 'cause I failed your mother.
That, of course, is Bad and Ruined by the Faces from their second album, Long Player. Hey, it's Bob Lefsetz here on the Rhino Cast. Rod Stewart's a complete joke at this point in time, but he used to be God. You have to understand, it was before the days of file trading. No one knew who this guy was. And you start to get Rolling Stone, and they say, this is the best record of the year, Gasoline Alley. And the guy's already got a first album that you missed, the Rod Stewart album. And the reviews were so unbelievable that I bought the album without hearing a thing. I mean, literally, I was going to college in Vermont. I was the hippest guy on college radio. No one knew Rod Stewart. I was far from the FM of New York. I have no idea if they actually played this guy. And one day from the Record Club of America comes a box. And I open up the box. And the album is called Gasoline Alley. It's got a picture of Rod Stewart with his rooster haircut on, whatever. And you can actually feel him on the cover. And you can feel the manhole in Gasoline Alley. And I put on the record. And it blows my fucking mind. What is up with this guy's voice? It's like, they say what a great voice he has. The guy sounds like, you know, he's croaking like a chicken. But that record went on to become my favorite record. Oh, God, that first, well, it's not the first album. The first one I bought, Gasoline Alley, I would love to play for you, but it's unfortunately controlled by PolyGram, Mercury, which, of course, is now part of the Universal Music Group. And it's just got this great remake of You're My Girl, which Rhinoceros had done a take. The original is by Little Richard. You should track that down. That's really pretty good. And I think that's what my memory, I think I'm right about that. You know, I'm always fearful of making a mistake because then you get email people say, how could you fuck up so badly? And then I got the first Rod Stewart album, which is even homier. Oh, God, there's so much great stuff on Gasoline Alley. Cut Across Shorty. And then they said, this guy is going to join the Small Faces. By this time, you know, this is 1970, 71. But back in 65, that's when I stopped buying singles. I would never buy singles. But there was this track, Ichiku Park by the Small Faces, had this phase run. I had to get this single, and I loved it. I said, wait a second, the Small Faces and this guy, Rod Stewart, are together? They've already been together, but the album that came out subsequent to Gasoline Alley by the Faces was called Long Player. That is the opening track, Bad and Ruin. And I was such a fanatic. Rolling Stone used to sell posters, and I got this poster of him sitting on a chair with his legs wide open. I put it up on my wall in my dorm room. People would constantly, I had him and Leon Russell, and people would come in and go, who is that guy? And of course, only months later, everybody knew it was Rod Stewart because he had a big hit with Every Picture Tells a Story. But before that album came out, I mean, the guy had so many albums, so different from today. There were essentially four records in a year, if not five, you could argue, three solo records and two Faces records. But I immediately got tickets to see this band at Portchester, the Capitol Theater in Portchester, New York, just over the Connecticut line, after the spring semester. And the band comes out and plays. I wish this was a video podcast because I would imitate him. They're playing. There's no Rod Stewart. And then coming out of the wings comes this guy who's walking almost like, you know, Mr. Natural of Keep on Truckin'. He's got his back, arched back, and he struts up, and he can't quite get close to the microphone. He eventually gets to the microphone. He's just at the microphone, and he falls almost over backwards, and the microphone is in his arm, and then he stands up and starts to sing. It was positively jaw-dropping. Back before concerts were these giant communal events and arenas, you were there. You couldn't even look at the person next to you because you were so riveted. The highlight of that show, of course, was – I'll play you the highlight of that show.
All right. This one you may well know. You may not know it. And if you don't know it, I really don't know where you've been. So you should know the tune. Here we go.
That, of course, is Ronnie Wood, who now plays with the Stones, playing the guitar. Ronnie Wood originally played bass in the Jeff Beck Group, and then he played guitar with Rod Stewart on his solo albums, and then he joined the Faces, and he brought Rod Stewart in. The person singing in the first half of the song is Ronnie Lane, who was one of the original members. There were three original members, Ian McLagan, and then Ronnie Lane, and all of a sudden, I can't remember the third guy. I could look it up, but, you know, you can do that research on your own. There was the keyboard player, the drummer, and then Ronnie used to play the guitar and bass, but whatever. So, and he ultimately died of MS. Very sad, but they did a concert to raise money with the best guitarists of all time. It was Jeff Beck, Eric Clapton, and Jimmy Page, and Jeff Beck blew everybody off the stage. But the reason I'm bringing all this up, and it's kind of interesting, I have to go back to Ronnie Wood, because Ronnie Wood was phenomenal on these Rod Stewart solo records. And in the Stones, he plays in a similar style to Keith, and therefore I believe he's superfluous. It was so much better with Mick Taylor. If only Mick Taylor would get back in the band. Although David Dorn here, he believes it's ultimately about the producer, Jimmy Miller. Once Jimmy Miller stopped working with them and their self-produced, the records were never as good. But you listen to that, Time Waits for No One with Mick Taylor, unbelievable shit. So I was a huge fanatic. You know, I bought every record. Oh, God. And listened to all the songs. And I bought so much that I went back and bought the first record that Rod Stewart made with the Faces, which turns out to be the best record. That's the subject of this podcast. The Faces albums with Rod Stewart got progressively worse. Many people believe that Rod kept the best songs that he wrote for his own albums. But, you know, that song, you know, Not As Good as a Wink to a Blind Horse, was Stay With Me. Stay With Me was basically about the only good track on the record. Okay, they got progressively worse until Ronnie left to play with the Stones. Rod went completely solo, and he was still legit for a while. But you get that first album, and I'll lead up to one of the great tracks, but I'll start with their cover of Wicked Messenger by Bob Dylan.
There was a
Can you hear all the instruments on it? The slide guitar. It's incredibly earthy. It has to feel like, you know, it was cut in a barn and you were walking down the street, the dirt street, some little neighborhood far from London, and you heard this sound. You stumbled in and it was just you. Now, this, of course, was when Ronnie was legendary for playing the slide guitar. And I am going to play you the track from that album where he really works it out. Headphone track goes on for 6 minutes, and he really wails Ronnie Wood on that particular track. Now, that doesn't really sound a lot like what came thereafter in the Faces. This record originally came out as Small Faces, normally known as First Step, because on the cover, Ronnie is holding a book that says First Step. And I'll play a song that is closer to what they did after, but far superior. They seem to have something to prove. The material was so much better, and the performances have such heart. They're not as irreverent as the later performances, but have more meaning. This is Three Button Hand-Me-Down. Phenomenal track. You know, I looked it up because I made a mistake. You know, I couldn't remember the third member came for the original Small Faces. Kenny Jones, of course, who went on to play drums with a million bands. And it's funny, you could see some of these guys in small clubs around L.A. Ian McLagan, great keyboard player, was around. But the reason I'm playing you this very first album is I have to play you the piece de resistance, which many people have not heard from that very first Faces album. As I say, came out of Small Faces. If you want to get the original vinyl like I have, it says Small Faces. You get it as a CD, it says Faces now. Flying. This is it. This is the essence of Rod Stewart. This is started off the first song on the second side. Wicked Messenger was the first song on the first side. This is as good as the band ever got. If you don't know Rod Stewart, this will either convert you or you'll never want to listen to him again. And if you don't know this track, find it immediately. This is Flying.
Across the mountains.
I remember hunting on the original Napster until I could find that song. And when I had it, it's an MP3 on my computer. I just played it again and again. Can't blame me. I mean, you have to look at the old Rod Stewart, somebody who had something to prove. If only they made records like that today with, you know, 20-second introductions where you could hear each individual instrument. This is why the great tracks are so phenomenal. And until next time, it's Bob Lefsetz for the Rhino Podcast.
There was a spring mist in the air, and the birds began chirping as the trees stretched their branches towards the heavens. Young Alexander slowly awoke, realizing that the night previous, so full of promise and delight, had not been without its consequences. As he pulled the knotted garment from his eyes, he surveyed a scene without parallel. There was a tire under a bush, while the smoldering remains of a combustion engine lay strewn across an inviting meadow, not more than 30 yards away. A steering wheel lay half exposed in a stream, and a chrome fender rose majestically from a patch of tall grasses, gleaming in the sun. He heard the sound of crying, and soon realized the sobs were emanating from his own lips. Why had he listened to his friends? Why hadn't he remembered his father's advice? Why had he acted so foolishly? Why had he driven blindfolded? A message from ABBA, announcers berating blindfolded atrocities.
Welcome to the Rhino Podcast. This is Eric Gladstone, and I'm pleased to be joined today by the breakout star of American Pie Bandcamp, Miss Ariel Kevel.
Hello.
Ariel, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
For those of you who don't know, Bandcamp has been a breakout hit on DVD, the number one sell-through from the minute it came out. Was that a surprise to you, Ariel?
It was a very pleasant surprise. No, actually, I think the biggest shock to me was when I flew home to Winter Park, Florida to be with my family for the holidays. And I walked in totally not thinking about it. It was like, I think it was the day before New Year's Eve. I walked into a Blockbuster with my boyfriend and my mom. I was in like my PJs. We just wanted to rent a late night movie. And I looked over on the shelf and I saw every single one of the American Pies sold out. And I just had this like moment, very quiet, you know, inside of myself, just kind of like everything froze. And it was like, oh my God, all those people are watching me right now. And it was a bit of a freak out moment, but it, you know, there was definitely excitement attached to it. It was just, right. It was the first time it really hit me that the reason there was none there was because people in my hometown were watching it. So that was
crazy.
Kind of my first, shock with it. But I was thrilled that it was doing that well. You know, it's better to see them all gone than all sitting there.
Right.
That's for sure.
Was it a fun movie to make?
Are you kidding me? Yeah, I mean, the cast all joked about it. We said like it was like we were showing up at camp every single day. I mean, the production company, I don't think they realized what they were getting themselves into when they handed us all these video cameras to do all the behind-the-scenes footage, because it was like giving us an excuse to play, you know, pranks on one another. And and Tad got very comfortable being the young Stifler, which meant he pretty much had at least one scene a day where he was dropping his pants. And so if you didn't want to see that, you just kind of had to, you know, hang out in your trailer. But no, it was a lot of fun. It was like, you know, I think that's part of what made the movie so good is that we showed up every day excited to be there, and we all had a really a mutual kind of like fun vibe between us all. And so it was like, whether we were working or we were, you know, waiting to do our next scene, we were goofing off for the behind the scenes cameras, or we were, you know, playing pranks on each other and putting, like, one time we put, never mind.
Come on.
No, it was basically, it really was like we were at camp every day because, you know, a lot of the scenes involve like the paddle boat racing or, you know, when we had the foam volleyball, when they called cut, you know, it was like we'd get as much foam as we could. And I ran up behind Steve Rash, the director, and just like shoved foam all over his face. And it was quite daring. But I was happy that he wasn't mad about it. But, you know, it was like, or when they called cut, instead of, you know, walking away from the foam, Tad picked me up and threw me into the foam. And you know, and the tag football and all of the kind of, you know, band jokes with Tad, you know, having to get a cord attached to, you know, make the oboe look like it was rising and falling. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all those little intricate details that you don't really see when you're watching the movie, but seeing the prep for it all was quite bizarre. So it was, I would say fun would be probably the only way to describe it, for sure.
What was your favorite part to film that people would see, that people can see on the DVD?
My favorite scene.
Preferably the unrated copy.
Right, yeah, yeah. Well, yes. I wasn't in the I wasn't in the shower sequence, so I didn't see that go on. I'm sure it was quite fun. One of my favorite scenes. All of them had their moments. I'd say one of my favorite. Well, one of my favorite sappy scenes. I'll start with that one, and then we'll do the fun one. Okay. One of my favorite kind of more serious scenes to film was the actual ending sequence, mm-hmm. just because the first time that we were shooting at USC, mm-hmm. and the first time, you know, I run down the stairs, and it's like the very mm-hmm. end of the movie, and I run down the stairs, and all of a sudden, the entire band, you know, comes out from behind and is marching in front of you. And it sounds really cheesy to say, but maybe not, because, you know, there's a lot of people that appreciate the music world. But it's when you have that many people in front of you playing these powerful instruments. I mean, literally, the sound blows you away. So that was one of my favorite kind of sappy moments. But I'd say one of the most fun moments was, doing the trip was really fun. When I got to fall, when I'm walking in mm-hmm. right before that sequence, that was really fun just because I love doing my own gag stuff. Mm-hmm. And then one of my other fun moments, I would say, would be probably, oh, I know what it is for sure. It was when we're all sitting at the table and I get to imitate Tad mm-hmm. when I'm like, you know, mm-hmm. that whole thing. Mm-hmm. That was a lot of fun because the first time I did it, he wasn't expecting me to make that face uh-huh. or to do his laugh. And when we cut, he was like, do I really laugh like that? You know, and that was really fun. That was, yeah, I like imitating people.
Okay, so question, one of the burning questions I had is, since it did go straight to DVD, why are there deleted scenes? And I was particularly curious because I thought a lot of the deleted scenes
were cute,
really
right?
good.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear you say that, because that was my parents' question too. No, I think it was a matter of, you know, when you make a movie, no matter what the script reads and no matter what you shoot, you honestly never know how it's going to turn out until you see it completely edited and cut and put together, because it's all in the editing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can completely change an entire script through editing. And I think, you know, probably maybe some of it was time and some of it was, you know, they had to cut this to make the story make sense, which means we don't need this in there anymore. And, you know, I mean, who knows? But yeah, I thought some of the deleted scenes were pretty cute too. But I was glad they put them in there, at least. So if people do watch the whole thing, which I hope they do, then they'll get to see those. But I don't know why some of them were cut. I thought some of the ones that were in there could have been cut. Well, that's just my own personal opinion.
You do realize that some people consider Eugene Levy to be a god of comedy.
Yeah, right? I'm one of them.
I mean, awesome. I mean, there's some stuff that would give you a hernia. It's so funny.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
What was it? Did you get any feel for that working with him?
Yeah, you know what? I've said this before, and it's like, you know, working with him, unfortunately, it was brief. It was only like a couple days. But in that time, it was so, you know, you watch this person on and do his comedy, and you get so used to his speech pattern and, you know, kind of the way that he vocalizes things. And then you're sitting right next to him in hair and makeup in the morning, and you're trying to look straight ahead because, you know, you're trying to be professional, and all you can hear is his voice. And you're like, oh, my God, I know that voice. You know, like, that's the guy that I laugh at. And then you meet him in person, and you realize he has the same voice, but he's so much more serious in person. And I just always assumed that, you know, kind of like the Vince Vaughns of the world, where they're so funny because they kind of just keep putting it out there and keep, you know, trying things until they find something funny and it works. And he is not that way at all. He is very, very precise and logical about his comedy, which was amazing for me to, you know, I was blown away to, like, have him in front of me and see him working on each word, like, before the cameras would roll, he would work on each word of his sentence and say it maybe like five different ways until he got the tone and the inflection right, and then he'd move on to the next word. And then when the cameras rolled, he would say it exactly like he had just practiced.
Now, you play a total goody two-shoes in band camp. But that's not the kind of roles you've had in the past.
Where are we going with this?
true or false? I mean, talk about some of the things you've done in the past. Gilmore Girls, for example.
Yeah, well, I would say Gilmore Girls was more similar to Elise Houston and band camp, just because it was that kind of annoyingly perfect type of smile and make everything okay, you know, type of girl. I would say that, you know, my role in, like, Soul Plane and Be Cool was more, was a different type of variable than the band camp role, because that was the very, like, my role in Soul Plane was, you know, obviously you can tell, but when I make up with Tom Arnold at the end, that I'm a good-hearted, you know, all-American kind of gal, but I'm also, you know, the girl who wants to go out and wants to have fun and wants to show off her body and wants to, you know, pretend that just because she's turning 18, she can take on the world and, you know, have that attitude carry her through any situation at any time. And then, you know, by the end, she's kind of like, uh-oh, you know, I need my daddy. But so I would say that, and also, again, and Be Cool, it was kind of like I kind of played the secretary that had a whole lot of attitude and not a whole lot of clothes to cover up with.
A lot of people don't know this, but you're also a Maxim girl.
I'd say some people know that. I've had some of my friends be like, oh my God, my boyfriend has you in his bathroom. And I'm like, oh, wow, okay, cool. Yeah.
For those of you who haven't seen her pictures, I highly recommend you check them out.
Thank you.
Was that fun to do?
It was fun. It was fun. We had, like, good music playing. I made sure I had some fun music there. I was surrounded with people that I trusted, you know, my agent or my manager and my publicist, and people that, you know, we had gone in there with some, I don't know if you'd say rules per se, just type of, just certain things that, things I would feel comfortable in and things I'm not comfortable in. And you know, coming from Florida, I grew up in my bathing suit. I mean, that's the bottom line. I was, you know, always in sandals and a bathing suit. And so that factor didn't really make me so uncomfortable. It was more of the lighting, the positioning, you know, things that I was, I think, 18 or 19 when I did it. And so it was like, you know, I wanted it. It's okay to be sexy. It's okay to be fun. But it had to be coming from me being comfortable, not me being, like, asked to do something. And so because I was having fun and we discussed all that ahead of time, I didn't feel like there was any, like, double standards or anything. And it was cool.
Okay, now hold this up for a second, Ariel. We're just going to take a little detour and do just a short excerpt from the R-Mats.
I'm going to try very hard, but okay. I'm asking for no judgment held against me.
Okay. We're just going to pick out some random questions here and test your knowledge.
Okay.
Okay. Let's see here. Who is not a ska band of the following? The Specials, The Selector, Modern English, The English Beat, Bad Manners.
The Selectors?
Oh.
No.
I'm sorry. That was Modern English.
Oh, Modern English sounds so ska.
It does kind of, actually. Michael Jackson set his hair on fire while filming a commercial for this beverage.
Okay.
Coca-Cola, 7-Up, Pepsi, Diet Coke, Diet Pepsi.
Pepsi.
That's correct.
Woo!
There you go. Very good. Very good.
I know my Michael. I'm just kidding. Oh, phew, okay, I got one.
There you go. Now you're on a roll.
What you just heard, you should have heard more of. For the complete, unedited interview, as well as a video version, visit the RhinoCast homepage at rhino.com. For more of what you just heard, visit rhino.com. Faces releases available for purchase include the 4-CD box set Five Guys Walk Into a Bar and Good Boys When They're Asleep, The Best of Faces. Original Faces studio albums as well as the American Pie Bandcamp DVD can be purchased in the Rhino Extended Store. New and recent releases at rhino.com include Future Retro, UB40, Who You Fighting For, and Talking Heads Dual Disc Reissues. And on DVD, Tori Amos, Fade to Red. Text Bjork to 74466 on your mobile phone to get official Bjork ringtones. Did you think that podcast was subpar? Do you think you could do better than us, Rhino, a powerful multinational corporation? Then email us at podcasts@rhino.com or call us at 1-800-546-3670. We'd love to hear from you.
You've just listened to a Rhino.com podcast. Visit Rhino.com for music, movies, and all kinds of crazy shit.